The Searchlight. The mansion of the 18th century Earl had been changed in the 20th century into a club, and it was pleasant. After dining in the great room with the pillars and the chandeliers under a glare of light, to go out onto the balcony overlooking the park. The trees were in full leaf, and had there been a moon, one could have seen the pink and cream-colored cockades on the chestnut trees. But it was a moonless night, very warm, after a fine summer's day. Mr. and Mrs. Ivamy's party were drinking coffee and smoking on the balcony. As if to relieve them from the need of talking, to entertain them without any effort on their part, rods of light wheeled across the sky. It was peace then. The Air Force was practicing, searching for enemy aircraft in the sky. After pausing to prod some suspected spot, the light wheeled, like the wings of a windmill, or again like the antenna of some prodigious insect, and revealed here a cadaverous stone front. Here a chestnut tree, with all its blossoms riding, and then suddenly the light struck straight at the balcony, and for a second a bright disc shone. Perhaps it was a mirror in a lady's handbag. "Look!" Mrs. Ivamy exclaimed. The light passed. They were in darkness again. "You'll never guess what that made me see," she added. Naturally, they guessed. "No, no, no," she protested. "Nobody could guess. Only she knew. Only she could know, because she was the great-granddaughter of the man himself. He had told her the story." "What story?" If they liked, she would try to tell it. There was still some time before the play. "But where do I begin?" she pondered. "In the year 1820. It must have been about then that my great-grandfather was a boy. I'm not young myself. No, but she was very well set up and handsome, and he was a very old man when I was a child, when he told me the story. A very handsome old man," she explained, "with a shock of white hair and blue eyes. He must have been a beautiful boy, but queer. That was only natural, seeing how they lived. The name was Comber. They'd come down in the world. They'd been gentlefolk. They'd owned land up in Yorkshire. But when he was a boy, only the tower was left. The house was nothing but a little farmhouse, standing in the middle of the fields. He saw it 10 years ago and went over it. We had to leave the car and walk across the fields. There isn't any road to the house. It stands all alone. The grass grows right up to the gate. There were chickens pecking about, running in and out of the rooms, all gone to rack and ruin. I remember a stone fell from the tower suddenly." She paused. "There they lived," she went on. "The old man, the woman, and the boy. She wasn't his wife, or the boy's mother. She was just a farmhand, a girl the old man had taken to live with him when his wife died. Another reason, perhaps, why nobody visited them, why the whole place was gone to rack and ruin. But I remember a coat of arms over the door, and books, old books, gone moldy. He taught himself all he knew from books. He read and read, he told me, old books, books with maps hanging out from the pages. He dragged them up to the top of the tower, the rope still there and the broken steps. There's a chair still in the window with the bottom fallen out, and the window swinging open, and the panes broken, and a view for miles and miles across the moors." She paused, as if she were up in the tower looking from the window that swung open. "But we couldn't," she said, "find the telescope." In the dining room behind them, the clatter of plates grew louder, but Mrs. Ivamy, on the balcony, seemed puzzled because she could not find the telescope. "Why a telescope?" someone had asked her. "Why? Because if there hadn't been a telescope," she laughed, "I shouldn't be sitting here now." And certainly she was sitting there now, a well-set-up, middle-aged woman with something blue over her shoulders. "It must have been there," she resumed, "because, he told me, every night when the old people had gone to bed, he sat at the window looking through the telescope at the stars. Jupiter, Aldebaran, Cassiopeia." She waved her hand at the stars that were beginning to show over the trees. It was growing darker, and the searchlight seemed brighter, sweeping across the sky, pausing here and there to stare at the stars. "There they were," she went on, "the stars." And he asked himself, "My grandfather, the boy, what are they? Why are they? And who am I?" As one does, sitting alone with no one to talk to, looking at the stars. She was silent. They all looked at the stars that were coming out in the darkness over the trees. The stars seemed very permanent, very unchanging. The roar of London sank away. 100 years seemed nothing. They felt that the boy was looking at the stars with them. They seemed to be with him in the tower, looking out over the moors at the stars. Then a voice behind them said, "Right you are, Friday." They all turned, shifted, felt dropped down onto the balcony again. "Ah, but there was nobody to say that to him," she muttered. The couple rose and walked away. "He was alone," she resumed. "It was a fine summer's day, a June day, one of those perfect summer days when everything seems to stand still in the heat. There were the chickens pecking in the farmyard, the old horse stamping in the stable, the old man dozing over his glass, the woman scouring pails in the scullery. Perhaps a stone fell from the tower. It seemed as if the day would never end, and he had no one to talk to, nothing whatever to do. The whole world stretched before him, the moor rising and falling, the sky meeting the moor, green and blue, forever and ever." In the half-light, they could see that Mrs. Ivamy was leaning over the balcony with her chin propped up onto her hands, as if she were looking out over the moors from the top of a tower. "Nothing but moor and sky, forever and ever," she muttered. Then she made a movement, as if she swung something into position. "But what did the earth look like through the telescope?" she asked. She made another quick little movement with her fingers, as if she were twirling something. "He focused it," she said. "He focused it upon the earth. He focused it upon a dark mass of wood upon the horizon. He focused it so that he could see each tree separate, and the birds rising and falling, and a stem of smoke there, in the midst of the trees, and then lower, lower." She lowered her eyes. "There was a house among the trees, a farmhouse. Every brick showed, and the tubs on either side of the door, with flowers in them, pink hydrangeas, perhaps." She paused, and then a girl came out of the house, wearing something blue upon her head, and stood there, feeding birds, pigeons. They came fluttering round her. "And then, look, a man. A man. He came round the corner. He seized her in his arms. They kissed. They kissed." Mrs. Ivamy opened her arms and closed them as if she were kissing someone. It was the first time he had seen a man kiss a woman, in his telescope, miles and miles across the moors. She thrust something from her, the telescope presumably. She sat upright. So he ran down the stairs. He ran through the fields. He ran down lanes, out upon the high road, through woods. He ran for miles and miles, and just when the stars were showing above the trees, he reached the house, covered with dust, streaming with sweat. She stopped, as if she saw him. And then, what did he do then? What did he say? "And the girl?" they pressed her. A shaft of light fell upon Mrs. Ivamy, as if someone had focused the lens of a telescope upon her. It was the Air Force, looking for enemy aircraft. She had risen. She had something blue on her head. She had raised her hand as if she stood in a doorway, amazed. "Oh, the girl. She was my..." She hesitated, as if she were about to say myself, but she remembered and corrected herself. "She was my great-grandmother," she said. She turned to look for her cloak. It was on a chair behind her. "But tell us, what about the other man? The man who came round the corner?" they asked. "That man?" "That man," Mrs. Ivamy murmured, stooping to fumble with her cloak. The searchlight had left the balcony. "He, I suppose, vanished." "The light," she added, gathering her things about her, "only falls here and there." The searchlight had passed on. It was now focused on the plain expanse of Buckingham Palace, and it was time they went on to the play.